really valued parts of our national curriculum.
The education debates begin on BBC Radio 4 this Wednesday night at 8.
This is Radio 3. It's 12 o'clock and time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Whether it's on the London stage in Beckett, on Broadway as Madame Morrible, as Professor Sprout in Harry Potter, or in her highly acclaimed Dickens Women, which she's currently touring around the UK and indeed the world, Miriam Margolyes seldom fails to make a memorable impression. Do you think the fact that you became an actor is very closely related to your childhood? It often seems to me that they're quite inseparable in some ways.
First of all, I'm an actress. I'm not an actor. I always want to be feminine and female rather than lumped in with all the other chaps. I don't know if my childhood made me into an actress. I think that you're born a performer, and I was born a performer, and that's how I've gone on.
But it seems to me that your relationship with your mother in particular, she was obviously quite an influence on you. I mean, everybody's mother is to a certain extent, but I suspect in this instance particularly so.
Yes, Mummy was an enormous influence on my life and my development, and I think she still is. And she had wanted to be an actress too, and was unable to be so because it was not polite in those days. So I think there is a truth that she did push me a little in that direction, but I was willing to be pushed. I wanted to be pushed.
And did you have some kind of wonderful break that actually got you into a position where you were being offered roles, or did it just all happen very slowly through doing rep?
I never had a break of any kind, and I still think I need one, really. No, I think my career has been, hopefully, a slowly upward graph. Who knows how it may end? But I'm very pleased to be on radio still and doing shows. That makes me happy because I'm 71 and I could have just faded away, but I haven't. You know, nobody's had the career they really want. I wanted to be taken more seriously as an actress instead of being a funny little person. And we'll see how it goes as I enter the final decades of my life.
Well, in a sense, we're all always yearning, all looking for something else. Otherwise, as human beings, we wouldn't endeavour, would we? So whether it's in love or whether it's in work, and particularly in religion, I guess, there is this quest.
My quest was not about the human part. My quest was always an artistic one, I think. And I believe it's still going. I have not arrived. I am travelling.
You're not a believer, but I think certain parts of the ritual of the Jewish faith are still very dear to you.
Yes, I think it's a bit like being a Catholic. You know, once a Jew, always a Jew. I lost my faith many years ago, and I actually feel a bit sorry for people who have it, because I think it's utterly misplaced. I think our faith should be in humanity and in a longing to be better. But I can't escape the sounds and the smells of being Jewish.
The sounds and smells that you associate with your mother inform the first piece, partially because of the singer, a mezzo.
Yes, my mother was a mezzo, a very fine mezzo. She was in the finals of the Golden Voice competition of 1936. And I was very used to listening to her. Her favourite mezzo was Conchita Supervia, the Spanish singer. But mine is Cecilia Bartoli.
What does she bring, do you think, to her performances that makes them so special?
There's an excitement about her attitude to music, and she's a performer like I am. She connects with the music and is able to transmit that connection to the audience. And she plays to the audience. She's sharing her delight. And I find it completely affecting and thrilling. Many years ago, I queued all night to hear Callas sing Tosca at the Opera House when I was a student, and I thought that night that I would never again be in paradise. But when I hear that, I feel that I am.
It's an incredible display of vocal pyrotechnics, quite apart from being wonderful music.
Terrific showing off, and I love that.
We heard Cecilia Bartoli with the Arnold Schoenberg Choir, the Vienna Volksoper Orchestra, and the conductor was Giuseppe Patarnay. Music from Rossini's La Cenerentola, I Was Born to Suffering and to Tears, but by some sweet magic spell, my fate has changed. You must have been quite precocious. I'm thinking now of your teenage years, Miriam Margulies, because you thought you'd like to model for Augustus John. So you wrote to him, and you did.
I saw him being interviewed by John Freeman. I just thought, what a wonderful old man. I really want to meet him. And so I wrote to him, care of the BBC, and said I would model for him. I never thought it was going to be in the nude, of course. And I don't know how my parents gave permission, but they did. I spent a day with him, and he told me about his sister Gwen, and I met Dorelia, his wife, who was slightly balmy, I thought. And he taught me Shove Ha'penny. He was a fascinating man, and it was a memorable encounter for me. He made me climb a ladder in the nude, and he looked at me, stroking his beard appreciatively, and he said,
"Very nice, very nice. Your skin takes the light."
I've always cherished that compliment.
Now, I think the next music is something that is dear to you because of its associations with your partner, having listened to it together.
Yes, I really know nothing about classical music or any music, unfortunately. And my partner felt that this was a sorry gap in my life, and she's taught me a lot. And the first lesson was the trout. It seems for me to have a quiet joyousness in the human experience. It's a gentle piece. It doesn't have the dynamic of Mozart, but there is a strong melody, and I just respond to it emotionally, I think.
Thank you. We heard The Theme and Variations, the fourth movement, from Schubert's Piano Quintet in A, The Trout. Franck Brallet was playing the piano with Renaud Capucin, violin, Gérard Cosset, viola, Gauthier Capucin, cello, and Alois Puch playing the double bass. We were talking about pyrotechnics in the voice earlier, but there's such a felicitous ability to develop that tune there that there is a kind of compositional pyrotechnic.
I don't have the language or the knowledge to put it as you have just done, but I totally agree with you. I am borne along by the melody.
But we are going back to pyrotechnics now, and in the form of Lucia Pop.
Ah, yes. Well, you've got to have a bit of Mozart, haven't you, in your life? And I feel thrilled when I hear music and I hear an artist connect in this way. Boy, does she know how to do it. Astonishing. It makes me feel that I could run up Everest just listening to it.
The Queen of the Night's aria from Die Zauberflöte Act 2 by Mozart. Lucia Pop was the soprano with the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Otto Klemperer. We mentioned earlier, Miriam Margulies, your no longer being a believer. It's curious, isn't it, that something which at its heart preaches love and generosity to fellow human beings and mercy, has actually bred an awful lot of cruelty and mayhem.
I think we have to make sense of our lives here on earth. Let us not think about the hereafter. Let us get it right here and now. This isn't a dress rehearsal. This is it. Get it right. And don't put it on to God or anything else. And I think that, like Dickens thought, that people just have to be better. Now, he was a Christian, as it happens, but I think that we have to be better in ourselves without looking into the clouds.
Nevertheless, as you said earlier, there are things about having been brought up in a certain faith that imprint themselves, aren't there?
Yes, there are parts of the Jewish liturgy and, of course, of the Bible which grip your heart and never let you go. And I'm grateful that I was born a Jew. I relish the culture and the food, and I'm never going to be separated from it. But I'm sorry I can't go along with the rabbis, but I can go along with the delicatessen and the stories and the music.
Of which you have chosen something from the Kol Nidre service.
It is a very beautiful liturgy, and it's the one service that I really do try to go to. Although I'm not a believer, I belong to a synagogue in Streatham in South London, and I really do try to get there. If I'm in England, I'll be at that particular service, which is the night before the Day of Atonement.
It's curious how you enjoy in music, whether it's sacred or secular, the dramatic, because that's hugely dramatic, singing.
Isn't it? Well, he was an opera singer,
Richard Tucker. Yes. Yeah.
And there is such an agony in the voice, isn't there? A longing. I find it very moving. Could almost make you believe.
Adonai, Adonai, by Shalom Secunda from the Kol Nidre service. And we heard, as you said, Richard Tucker with Joseph Garnett playing the organ, and Shalom Secunda was directing the choir. Miriam, I think there's a lot of drama in this particular performance, and of course it's informed by the tragedy that happened to the protagonist shortly afterwards.
I always cry when I listen to Elgar's cello concerto, and when it's Jacqueline Dupré, of course. Nobody could ever play it better than that. And you feel such sadness for the loss of her powers. And she knew what was happening. That was what was so terrible. I never knew her, but I think you know her from this.
I couldn't help noticing, Miriam Margolyes, the extraordinary connection, as it were, between hearing Richard Tucker and then Jacqueline Dupré, both with very powerful lachrymose sentiments.
Yes, there is a mournfulness, a longing. And I think that does answer to something in me. I suppose it must do. A somewhat depressed part of my nature. And most of my life is spent being funny. So I'm quite glad that I can listen to the call of the sad as well.
Jacqueline Dupré was playing the first movement of the Elgar Cello Concerto in E minor, Opus 85, with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sir John Barbirolli. We're in a little English corner of the programme because we've got Parry coming up. So it might be nice just to talk for a moment about your one-woman Dickens performances, which have garnered enormous appreciation. It must have been great fun to choose these women that Dickens depicts, because he is such a wonderful writer, such a keen observer of human fragility, and I imagine there are things that he describes and his kind of take on them, which you probably feel very much in sympathy with.
My feelings towards Dickens are very mixed, as I imagine most people's must be, because he's a very great writer and an appalling man on occasion. And that duality is fascinating to me. That's what I wanted to bring out in my show. And I think it's pleasing people because it's surprising them. I don't think people perhaps knew that he has that other side to him. And the characters that he wrote and the scenes, they just burst out of the books. And I love exuberance, and I think he's a wonderfully exuberant writer.
If I were to ask you to choose perhaps a little moment from the show, does something come to mind?
My favourite character has become Miss Havisham. It used to be Mrs. Gamp, but as I've got older and perhaps, as you say, more lachrymose, I think Miss Havisham fills the bill for me, and this is a bit of her talking to Pip. Look at me. You are not afraid to look at a woman who has not seen the sun since you were born. Do you know what I touch here? Yes, ma'am. What do I touch? Your heart, ma'am. Broken. I am tired, and I want diversion. I have done with men and women, and I sometimes have sick fancies. I have a sick fancy. I should like to see some play. There, there. Play. Play? Play! Call Estella at the door. You can do that.
Wonderful. I can see why audiences are entranced. And you're touring this round the UK at the moment and then actually going to other parts of the world.
I want to do another bit as well.
All
because
right.
I can't just let that be it. Yeah. I've got to do this other bit of Miss Havisham because in this piece I think she's like Dickens. Maybe she is even Dickens himself. I'll tell you what real love is. It is blind devotion, unquestioning self-humiliation, utter submission, trust and belief against yourself and against the whole world. Giving up your whole heart and soul to the smiter as I did.
Yes, I can see why that tells you quite a lot, doesn't it?
I think so. It's the dark side of Dickens.
We're going to sort of bookend it, as it were, with a wonderful, and in this case, a sort of quintessential English piece. But this, I think, takes you back, Miriam Margolyes, to your days at Oxford High School, which you really enjoyed, didn't you?
Oxford High School has been, is now, the best school in the world. I love it to bits, and I had the most wonderful time there. And all my friends from my school are still in my life. Only yesterday, when I was doing the show, somebody came up to me, and I immediately knew her name. And it was 60 years since we had been together at the high school. And Jerusalem was the song that we always sung at school. And for me, it encapsulates that world of the 1940s and 50s when I wore a school uniform and I knew my place and my teachers knew who I was and they liked me and I was full of friends and life was clear. And Jerusalem is a great rousing tribute to the England which I was born in and which I love. And it's not just the music, of course. It's those words of Blake. They are thrilling to hear.
Jerusalem by Parry. We heard there the Winchester Cathedral Choir and the Wainfleet Singers with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra conducted by David Hill. We've talked about pyrotechnics, we've talked about drama, we've talked about a yearning and a sadness. And they're all kind of qualities that are mixed up with the rather peculiar genius of Freddie Mercury.
Yes, well, I'm terribly far away from popular culture. I don't know anything about it. I never listened to the Beatles. I didn't know who the Doors were until someone explained. And suddenly this chap, Freddie Mercury, burst into my consciousness. He's an incredible performer, musician, his sense of drama, of fun, of carnival, is explosive. And he died so young and so sadly. And so I really wanted him to be in my choices because I honour him.
Barcelona! Barcelona!
Yeah.
Barcelona, the track that Freddie Mercury wrote for Montserrat Caballé, who of course was singing there with him. Well, thank you very much, Miriam Margulies, for choosing these pieces of music, which clearly ring a bell in your sort of consciousness, those qualities of yearning, the qualities of drama, and the qualities of pyrotechnics.
I've really enjoyed this slightly scary experience of being on Radio 3. Thank you so much.
It's been a great pleasure to have you, Miriam Margulies. Thank you.
Miriam Margulies was talking to Michael Barclay. And next week on Private Passions, there's another chance to hear an edition recorded in 2010 with the engineer Cecil Balmond, who's collaborated with Anish Kapoor on the ArcelorMittal orbit at the Olympic Park. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3, and the producer of today's programme was Chris Marshall.
The Pride of London. In this Olympic and Paralympic year, the BBC Proms is celebrating music written for, in and about London. And tonight you can hear Gilbert and Sullivan's take on the city. The Yeoman of the Guard is the grandest, most emotionally engaging of all of the G&S Savoy operas, set in one of the most important parts of Tudor London, the Tower. Jane Glover conducts the cast with the BBC singers and the BBC Concert Orchestra. Tonight at the BBC Proms at 7:30 on Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock. Time for the news from Loba Katari.
The Catholic Church in Scotland has broken off top-level communications with SNP ministers because of the Scottish Government's plan to allow same-sex marriage. The Church has accused the SNP administration of going against the will of the people in a recent consultation. A spokesman for the First Minister, Alex Salmond, insisted that relations with the Church remained good. The founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, is expected to make a public statement shortly from the balcony of the Ecuadorian embassy, where he sought refuge for 2 months. Ecuador has granted him diplomatic asylum, but Britain says it's obliged to extradite him to Sweden for questioning about alleged sexual offences. Security officials in Libya say at least 2 people were killed in car bomb attacks in Tripoli, orchestrated by former members of Colonel Gaddafi's regime. The first bombings in the capital since the former dictator was overthrown a year ago happened near a military academy and close to the Interior Ministry. Japanese nationalists have provoked anger in China by landing on a group of disputed islands in the East China Sea. Protesters waving Chinese flags have gathered in at least 8 cities to demand that the Japanese leave the islands. President Assad of Syria has made his first appearance since a bomb attack in Damascus a month ago, which killed his brother-in-law. Syrian state television showed him praying at a mosque in the capital. Managers at the Lonmin Platinum Mine in South Africa, where more than 30 striking miners were shot dead by police on Thursday, have ordered the strikers to return to work by tomorrow. Those who fail to return to work will face losing their jobs. And the weather, rain in the southwest will move north across Wales, northern England and Scotland during the afternoon. The southeast will stay dry and sunny with some cloud. It'll be another hot day, with temperatures peaking at 31 degrees Celsius in London. Eastern parts will be in the high 20s, and most of the rest of England will be in the low 20s. It'll be slightly cooler in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. That's the latest BBC News. The time is 1:02.
And time for today's Early Music Show with Catherine Bott.
Hello. You may have caught yesterday's Early Music Show, which was all about Handel's boyhood teacher, Friedrich Wilhelm Zacho. It's available online if you missed it. In today's show, we've got highlights from a concert given this June at the Handel Festival in Halle, Handel's birthplace. They've been made available to us by our colleagues in the European Broadcasting Union. This year sees the 300th anniversary of Zacho's death, so the concert combined Handel's earliest surviving autograph score, Dixit Dominus, with cantatas by Zacho. And as a bit of a taster, here's the Sinfonia, which opens one of those cantatas. The opening Sinfonia from F.W. Zachow's Ascension-Tide Cantata, Siehe, ich bin bei euch alle Tage, Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. It was played by Das Kleine Konzert, directed by Hermann Max. Das Kleine Konzert is the orchestral offshoot of a distinguished chamber choir, the Rheinische Kantorei. Together, choir and orchestra specialise in the music of the time of Bach and Handel, with particular emphasis on bringing to light neglected German masterpieces. Their conductor, the musicologist Hermann Max, has himself been awarded the Telemann Prize by the city of Magdeburg for his contribution to Telemann's scholarship and informed performance. We're going to hear a complete cantata by Zacho now, for four voices, strings and continuo. So let me tell you the names of the concert's solo singers too. Sopranos Veronika Winter and Verena Gropper, alto Franz Wittstum, tenor Imo Schröder and bass Markus Fleig. I said strings and continuo. Zacho's Herr, wenn ich nur dich habe is unique in the German cantata repertoire for having a solo for harp. And this exciting bit of orchestration seems to have fired Handel's imagination. He copied the work and took it to London, where it may well have influenced the scoring of his oratorios Esther and Saul. The playing of the harp crops up a great deal in the Old Testament. It's King David's instrument, to be tuned to cheerful strains, as it says in one of the arias from Esther. Herr, wenn ich nur dich habe, opens with a free translation of words from Psalm 73. Lord, if only I have you, I ask for nothing more from heaven or earth.